Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown, at the Muslim Hour.
Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon.
Interesting meeting, I believe, yesterday with the Mexican president, Niente. Now, some dynamics coming from that, and there is a translation. It's a in English translation coming from the press conference that was held after the meeting with the Mexican president, saying some pretty interesting and encouraging things, very much so, and it has nothing to do with a border wall. Now, Trump doubling down in his immigration address last night in Phoenix, basically saying that this is the way it's going to be. It's this way, the way I've presented it from the beginning, and not slowing the steam of the proposed border wall. So, and then, of course, says it didn't even discuss it, whereas President Niente is saying, I'm sorry, but we did, and I said we wouldn't pay for it. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more coming up. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Follow me on Facebook. Leo C. Brown, you can join in the conversation there, like this post that I just put up, and time will tell what sort of response we see to this one. But apparently Pope Francis is now declaring the care for the environment, or care for creation, I guess we should say, a new work of mercy. Now, there are those who will see this and undoubtedly have something negative to say. I can almost predict that. But when you think about theology of the body and you understand the incarnational nature of creation, especially human creation, undoubtedly, but all of creation reflects the nature of God. When we get that, when we understand that, now it only stands to reason that we would embrace this work of mercy as just making sense. Now, I know that there are those who have gotten at least a bit concerned over Pope Francis's environmental angles. They kind of think, oh, well, this guy, he's no scientist. How dare he say that? Because he did mention global warming, no doubt. Laudato Si, right? That's the one that has at least a couple of references to global warming. Generally speaking, he talks about climate change. But as I've said many times, why do we argue about this? Why is this? Why is this, of all things, a political point of division? Why don't we simply say, yeah, you know what? It's probably pretty good to take care of creation because we live here. This is our home. And maybe, just maybe, it makes sense to protect it. Not only for ourselves, but for future generations. Make sense? Maybe. But no, we want to get into, well, who knows that global warming is global warming and climate change. And I know there's a political component here. I realize that, and believe me, I'm no fan of the EPA. I'm not sitting here saying, yeah, let's add, and as a result of this, Pope Francis, thank you, and now let's add even more environmental protection restrictions. No, not saying that. Why would I say that? I'm saying creation in and of itself is reflective of the nature of God. Human creation is the most supreme reflection of God's nature, but all creation is God's creation. So if we respect God, if we value what we've been given, the gifts we've been given through creation, then why would we not want to have nothing but the highest regard for that? And some may have problems with Pope Francis adding this work of mercy. Well, how do you just add the work of mercy? Well, whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. This was the power given to the vicar of Christ, the first pope, St. Peter. Now, there were those who got in at least some degree of uproar. What was it? Goodness, 16 years ago? Is that when it was? The Jubilee year, when then, now, Saint Pope John Paul II, but then Pope John Paul II, introduced these new mysteries of the Rosary. The heck is this? Where did this come from? How dare he? There are only three versions. Don't need a fourth. What is that all about? So this is the concern as well, that we can't change things. We can't change things because it's unchangeable. These are things that are unchangeable. Yeah, there are some things that are unchangeable. Absolutely. Yeah, the sovereignty of God. Unchangeable. Pope can't do anything about that. The nature of God and man, the relation of God and man reflected in traditional marriage of a man and a woman, can't be changed. That's an incarnational element to theology as well. But to say that you can't add a group of mysteries to the rosary, to say that you can't add a work of mercy to the corporal works of mercy. Now the question is, do we add this is just a question. I'm like, well, now what do you do? I'm like, so do we add, is there an eighth spiritual work of mercy? Now, I don't know. But why do we always have to, the first thing we do is, this response is, well, this is bad. This is wrong. What's this guy thinking? Where does he get fun adding things to the church? Who does he think he is? The Pope. That's who he thinks he is. And interestingly enough, he doesn't just think that. He is the Pope. So he can do these things. So, I would hope that we would have a little bit more openness to where the Holy Spirit is leading the church, and pray, literally pray, that this is a wow. You know, can this be something that is that door that opens to someone whose heart has been hardened, who feels like they've been wounded, who feels like they have no place in our church, but then they see this and go, wow, that's kind of what I've been waiting for. And for the rest of us, you know, we don't have to bail by any means. We can stay right where we are and welcome those individuals in who may see this as a stepping stone towards something, because now suddenly there's a degree of inclusiveness, if you want to say, or a degree of expansiveness. I don't care, however you want to look at it. It's a degree of difference. There's a marked degree of difference that lets them say, oh, wow. Wow. maybe there's something to this. And if that's the result, but I mean, first off, isn't that the result? I think that we think at times we get into this rut of thinking, no, the result is me and my worship experience. The result is me and what I do at Mass. That's what Catholicism's all about. Or the result is me and what I do in prayer or whatever. When doesn't Jesus say to go and find the lost sheep? Doesn't Jesus say to go to all nations and to share this message? And if that message falls on deaf ears because it looks restrictive or ancient or antiquated or old school, whatever, and then suddenly somebody goes, oh, wow, here's a breath of fresh air, and there's something of this nature that's changing. This sounds good to me, and I want to know more. Why would we not? Why would we not want to encourage that and embrace the opportunities of people coming in because of it? But unfortunately, sometimes we're just stuck. We're stuck thinking that the way it works is the way it's always been, and we don't change a thing because that's how it works. And I don't know. I'm not saying that this is some brilliant move of evangelization effort that's going to result in droves of converts. I'm not saying that at all. But I would be willing to venture a bet on someone will see this. Someone will see this and say, maybe I need to give them another look. That could be someone who's fallen away from the church. That could be somebody who is experiencing another faith tradition or no faith tradition or whatever. But I would be willing to put money on that fact that, yes, someone will see this and go, wow. So now there's this much regard for nature and creation. I want to know more about these guys. And if that one individual does that, then isn't it worth it? And yeah, it's leaving the 99 behind, because the 99 are left scratching their heads going, how did this happen? We just got a new work of mercy. It's kind of like official and a part of things now. I don't remember voting on that. Nobody asked me, right? But what if it is the game changer, the single number one absolute, this is the game changer for someone who has been on the fence, or maybe someone who's not even near the fence. That's what I'm praying for. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our friend of the show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Culture, current events, Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Perusing Facebook here, I need to post this. Not an iPhone in sight. That's how we rolled. Kids on bikes and very, very cool Schwinn Stingray looking bikes, which I would ride right now. I was driving recently down the street, and I saw that. I'm like, man, what? Those are like four stingrays? What? And I literally turned around, went back to the yard sale, and I'm like, what is up with this? And it turned out they were reproductions. And at first, I thought somebody had dragged something out of someone's closet or garage, rather, and there was a rare find. But they were beautiful bikes, all that this guy had restored. They were still reproductions. He wanted $75 for it. I cannot tell you how tempted. I was so tempted. And I thought, that is the most impractical thing I could ever do, because I already have 50 bikes. So I don't need another one. I don't have a Stingray, though. And man, was I ever tempted. But I didn't do it. So yep, you can be proud of me that I exercised a little bit of self-control, which is not always what I do. But in that case, I did. I took a look at this. Well, first I looked at Trump's address last night, and he laid out this 10-point plan, and it kind of seemed to be the same thing we've heard from Donald Trump from the beginning. And then a question I was asking is, how different is this really? Because it seems like the U.S. is already kind of doing this, at least when it comes to recognizing illegal immigration, or I should say illegal activity of illegal immigrants. So the one way to know for sure if an immigrant is truly illegal is if they commit a crime, they're arrested, run a background check, they got nothing, they're not a citizen. There is already recourse for these individuals to be reported and to be sent back. That's what the ICE units do. That's what they're out there to take care of. They're there to make sure that immigrants are controlled and enforced, and they are sent back if something of this nature happens. So for Trump to make this grandiose platform issue of this is what we'll do when I'm president, when it kind of seems like that's what's already happening, I think is at the least interesting and maybe a little bit just bizarre, because are we not doing that already? And I'm sure there can be arguments of, well, there could be more. Okay. I agree there could be more. And that's where I'm going with this, because there could be more. And when I hear what I have to just describe as inspiring, when I hear the inspiring speech of President Nyerere saying what he said about working together with America, that's the kind of stuff I want to hear. That's the rhetoric that energizes me. That's the principle and value that makes me say, yeah, okay, yeah, let's do this. Because it certainly appears as though there's at least a willing spirit when it comes to Mexico's president to find ways to truly better the economy of Mexico and the U.S. So if you can work together in that way, and yes, I know we do, and don't, and he even went through the stuff of, you know, there's more than all of the other countries combined, our purchasing of imports from America over the top of everyone else combined. So yeah, there's that. We know that there's a relationship already. There's a 40%, I think 40%, I'm trying to remember what the 40%, how he said this. I believe it's 40% of the gross domestic product of Mexico that's connected to the U.S. Don't hold me to that. I'm trying to remember exactly how he explained that. But these are big numbers. These are big, big numbers. However, he says at a point in his address, we could always do more. Even though we have this established, we could always do more. And just because somebody wins does not mean someone has to lose. Beautiful, beautiful expression of what it means to be collaborative and interdependent and work together and actually find a solution, as opposed to just creating more problems by focusing so much on the problem that that's all we do is see problems. You know, it's okay to see problems if you see solutions. If you see problems as opportunities to find a solution, then find the problems, but don't call them that. Simply say, you know what? I found a solution to move this forward. We can get beyond this issue very easily if we do this, this, and this. That is now a collaborative spirit that opens up doors and provides opportunities for all kinds of things. I may be wrong, but that's what I hear in President Nyerere. There are those who could argue with me and say, but Leo, you don't know what you're talking about. You're naive. That's not how this is. And if that's the case, so be it. Maybe I am wrong. But I know what I heard. I know what he said. And he was very clear that this is something that he wants to see happen. He wants to see collaboration, greater collaboration. So the question that I ask is, well, what if we did collaborate on a more effective fashion? Is there a way by doing that that maybe we could stem the issue of illegal immigrants? Because now we've provided greater economic opportunities. And to do that in these border towns where their problems seem to be rampant, maybe that's the way to do this. Maybe. Now, can we do that without the decrying of how dare you take jobs away from America because we just happen to put it across the border and American businesses are benefiting because they can get labor at a fraction of the cost, still with dignity of the worker, because it's all called cost of living. It's all called exchange rates, and things that are one way in one country are not the same way in the other country, and maybe working even more closely, even more deliberately, even with more incentive to American businesses when it comes to tax breaks, when it comes to all kinds of other opportunities to grow industry, to grow business. Why would we not do that? Why would we not? But yet, we haven't. Why couldn't Mexico essentially be another China? And I know that there was a time when a lot of manufacturing was going, and then we've wrangled back and forth on this and that, but we could do better. This is what the Mexican president says. We can find ways to work more effectively together so we all win economically. I promise you, if you're winning economically and you're doing that with partners, especially your border partners, you don't have an immigration issue. Because if you create industry on the other side of the border where people are trying to escape into the U.S. and you create jobs for them there, why would they leave? They got what they're looking for. They're not coming to America just because it's America, to live the American dream and to, I don't know, be Scarface. That's not what they're doing. They're looking for opportunity. Let's create that. We could do that. Way better than we have. So I saw this interesting thing as I was upstairs in my conference room this morning. I never noticed it. It's been there, obviously, for a long, long time. As I opened the credenza, yellow tape at the top of this thing stuck inside and browning edges of this paper. And it says, the basic principles. This credenza came from a used office place. And there are five basic principles here. Focus on the situation, issue, or behavior, not on the person. Number two, maintain the self-confidence and self-esteem of others. Number three, maintain constructive relationships with your employees, peers, and managers. Number four, take initiative to make things better. And number five, lead by example. Amazing. I don't know what company had this piece of furniture before we happened to get it at the used Habitat for Humanity store, but that's a blessing that I did not expect. And I've been in and out of this thing before, and I don't know why I'd never noticed it. It's just the way the angle I was standing. It's a bottom cabinet. Never seen it. Today I see it. It's been there a long time, but it's something that we all need. It's a lesson that we need now more than ever. You know, don't make it about people. Make it about issues, situations, and behavior. If you're going to make it about people, then make it about their self-esteem and their self-confidence. Build that up. Keep your relationships constructive. Really? Who does that? How do we have constructive relationships? I thought we were supposed to just tear each other down and be negative. Win. Beat them. Let's beat them, right? Take initiative to make things better. Really? I'm just going to do what I can. I'm just getting by. Is that in my job description? I don't think so. Lead by example. No, that's a boss's job. That's what he's supposed to do. He's the leader. We'll watch him. What's he doing? So he's sitting at his desk. Well, look at that lazy so-and-so, which could be working very hard at his desk, right? But an interesting time to see these basic principles, wherever the heck they came from, when we need basic principles now more than anything. Back with more in a moment. I'm Leo Brownlee.
For listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
We're back, and Leo Brown, happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost an hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. On Thursdays, we are joined by someone from Church of the Nativity up in Antimonium, Maryland, with the Rebuilt Parish Association, and Father Michael White is with us today. Father, how are you?
Hey, Leo, how are you today?
Doing terrific, thank you. Big, exciting weekend, Mother Teresa's canonization, and what do you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, I just think that it's so exciting that we get to witness this, and I can't wait to get up early and watch it. This is the second canonized saint that I have actually met, and beautiful.
That's awesome. I'm losing you a little bit, so hopefully you can hear me. If you've met a couple of saints, I would hope that maybe something's rubbing off on you by now. I'd certainly hope that. But this
you would think so, right?
You'd hope, right? But this this is a time, I think, when our church can shine in ways that normally we just don't get the opportunity to, because now there's press outside of Catholic press. And I'll tell you this, I heard the other day, I was listening to NPR, as often I do, and there was a story about the canonization, and they were pretty darn good about really expressing the concept of you know, this scrutiny, the scrutiny that's there when it comes to examining the miracles. And they even had an atheist testimony. It was amazing. And I thought, wow, you know, we couldn't ask for more of apologetics than NPR talking about this canonization. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think that Mother Teresa is just a beautiful representative of what's best in our Catholic faith to the rest of the world, and a very compelling candidate for the cause of Christ in our world. I have a great story to tell you if you have a minute to hear.
Oh, please, sure.
A couple of years ago, Mother Teresa was opening a facility here, a convent, and they were going to have a hospice to take care of AIDS patients in Baltimore City. They opened it up in a very, very, very impoverished part of town. She insists that her sisters live in such communities, and we went for the dedication. I was involved in the dedication ceremony, and it began outside with the blessing of the facility and so forth by the cardinal here, and then we processed inside. And Mother Teresa processed in with us, and we stopped in the lobby to do the blessing and the prayers in the lobby. And the people who had done this renovation work on this building and prepared it for the sisters had hung this huge photograph of Mother Teresa in the lobby. And we walked in. She turned to the cardinal and said, could you please wait a moment? And she disappeared. Had no idea where she was going. She reappears with a kitchen chair. She drags this chair across the lobby. Little tiny lady climbs up on the chair and wrestles this huge photograph that was bigger than her the wall. And she couldn't even carry it. She drags it across the floor. Everybody's watching because we're just astonished at what's going on. She drags it across the floor, shoves it in a closet, and then turns to the cardinal and says, okay, now we're ready.
That's great. Yeah, you know, the amazing humility in her, and I never heard that story, but I've heard other similar things where she just refused luxuries, she refused accolations, anything that would be any sort of putting her in the spotlight or putting her in some sort of role of special care. Now, I have heard this, whether it's true or not, I heard that she would have a glass of wine on a flight, though.
Oh, is that right? Yeah,
that's what I've heard from those who flew with her. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But who doesn't want a glass of wine on a flight? My goodness.
Exactly.
Jeez, I'll drink a bottle of wine while I'm on a flight. But I love that. I love to hear those kind of stories and those little anecdotes of the beauty of her in so many ways. And, you know, Father, for me, I was a young guy with no clue of my faith, and I didn't even know, this is what I share all the time, I didn't even know she was Catholic. All I knew is that this is a woman that impressed the daylights out of me. I just thought, wow, yeah. she's got street cred like nothing I've ever seen, and I was just so impressed with the work she was doing. And I mean, the Catholic, that was Catholic identity. That's what I love. That was Catholic identity for me as a non-Catholic.
Yeah.
Without it being, this is Catholic. You know what I mean? She never proclaimed that. Now she's gotten criticized for that. But for me, I saw, I love what this woman is doing, and I wanted to do what she was doing, and I didn't even know what it was. I didn't even know what had driven her.
And here's a little known fact about her. She had a tremendous sense of humor.
Oh, is that right?
She loved to laugh, and she loved when the people around her were laughing too. It was almost a childlike sense of humor. It was very, very attractive.
Wow. Wow. You know, and it's interesting you say that it's attractive because, you know, I've said that about her so many times, is there was just a beauty in her that you couldn't help but be attracted to. I mean, I don't know anyone. I know her detractors are out there. There's no doubt they're there. But generally speaking, she had this amazing charm, right? There was just something so charming about her that she emanated this charm. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did. And it did rub off on you, really. You just found yourself sort of acting differently around her. Acting better around her.
Right. But yeah, and interesting, you know, I think typically we think of charming as being something almost swarmy, right? You keep your arms distance from somebody who's overly charming. And she wasn't that. There was just this humility that you couldn't help but be attracted to. And I'm excited. I really, you know, there were two canonizations I had hoped to attend. I'd always said this years ago, I say, I want to be there for Pope John Paul II and Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
Well, you know, neither of them are materializing for me, but I'll certainly be praying through this experience. And because what I hope and what I'm convinced of, Father, and I'm sure this will happen, someone will be introduced to our faith for the first time because of this canonization taking place. I'm confident in that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Good things will happen someday and beyond. And now we have a new saint that we can pray with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've had a card. It's a very interesting, I don't know where I got it. I had it for years. And it's like, it's one of those, like, almost, I don't know, it was like the things we got out of the Cracker Jack box in the 70s that would change the image when you tilt it, you know? And so I've got this interesting card of Mother Teresa that you can tilt and it changes her image. And I don't know. I've had it for 15 years and it's always been in my studio and close by. So I've always asked for her intercession. And it's very interesting because of where we are now in our ministry and what we're doing with Breadbox Media as we're about to launch out, to think, hey, here's another saint. Here's somebody else that can help us through this and help pray with us. So I'll definitely be relying even more on her intercession now. So it's exciting.
Excellent.
So something special for you guys up in Timonium for this, or just kind of watching?
Yeah, definitely. We'll be celebrating it at Mass all weekend long, and we've got some brand new holy cards for the brand new saint that we'll be encouraging people to take and use in their daily prayer.
That's good. And I'm guessing that if anybody has any sort of inquiry at all after seeing this, you guys are going to be there with open arms to bring them into a discussion, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
No.
Absolutely.
So other than the time that you saw her drag the photo, what else impressed you when you were with her personally?
There was another occasion when I was in school. I went to seminary in Rome at the North American College, and she would visit regularly. An annual event, actually. She would come up to the college for evening prayer, and then after the evening prayer, she would address the students. And we were involved in our theological studies at the time, so we were used to, you know, very academic lectures all day long. But she would get up and speak just as simply as could be, with the kind of simple exhortation that you might expect from your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always taken aback by that. That always surprised me because I expected some kind of profound insight or theological revelation.
Right,
and
sure.
Instead, it was just this little lady sort of, you know, telling you the most, underscoring the most basic things.
Mm. Yeah. Be good to each other. Something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Treat each other well. Yeah. All right, Father, that's all we have time for. God bless you and enjoy the canonization. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. That's all we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.